brief introduction so we know who's here. Max, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Max Halperin.
Vaughn Bortleson.
Kathy Bonifield.
Mark Ritchie.
Beth Fraser.
Grace Wachler-Rhodes.
David Maeda.
Gary Poser.
Pat McCormick.
Thank you. Next item, the adoption of the minutes from the prior meeting. Do you have those in front of you? Any suggested changes, additions, or corrections?
Hi, Lori. This is Beth Fraser. We're just getting the meeting started.
Seeing none, entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Our first item on the full agenda is the presentation from our pilot projects. They're, of course, not our pilot project. They are a separate entity, but we've been following their progress very closely. We got some short reports last time, and there will be more formal reports prepared that will then be combined, and a final report for the legislature will be presented, I think, basically the same day as our report. But we have three presentations, the first from Clay County. Lori Johnson, thank you so much for taking time and calling in.
Sure.
Can we can hear you well. Can you hear us?
Yeah, we can hear fine, yep.
Great. So Lori, we're going to tee you up first and look forward to your brief presentation and then any kind of questions from our task force members, and then we'll move to the Ramsey County report second.
Okay. I don't really have a presentation as such put together. I can just give a quick overview.
We like that.
Okay. We work with HART and ES&S. And as far as the e-poll books in general, I think that went pretty well. HART went much better than ES&S. The person that came to the training went pretty well for both of them. The HART data that we had wasn't our data, so it didn't go quite as smoothly, but I think it would have if we would have had our own data on the training. But as far as election day, HART seemed to be much more organized, and the person that came up to do all the setup and assist with us was much more knowledgeable and seemed to have more experience in setting everything up and knowing what was going on. And overall, I think the HART much better up things with populating the label incorrectly, but and on some of the data as well. Everything else went really good. The license driver swipes went well. We really liked the out of the label for their signature. We really liked that. And as far as ease of use of the product, people caught on very quickly, even those that didn't have really much of any computer experience. And so plus it was very easy. So it was much easier. The person of us didn't really seem to understand what was going on very well. The system itself, cords everywhere, very complicated, virtually impossible for an election judge to set up themselves. And the driver's license swiper wasn't working. And I guess that was pretty much it as far as ES&S. The system itself, it was fairly easy to use as far as, you know, the computer itself. That went fine. But like I say, the setup was virtually impossible for an election judge to do. And as far as adding ABs to the roster, they didn't really know how to do that.
AB, of course, is absentee ballot.
Yeah. So was here to assist. They didn't really know how. And so I guess that's just for you, and the HART was far superior to the ES&S.
Well, Lori, it seems like you learned quite a bit with this pilot. I want to see if there's any questions for you, for Clay County, from task force members. Mr. Poser?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Laurie, I guess I'd just be curious if you wanted to comment a little bit on the loading of the files into SVRS and your processing of the files once they were uploaded.
Actually, loading the files, I mean, I had to fix a few things in the files, but it really wasn't any big deal on those. The HART one, I think, loaded up very easily, and then I had to fix some data in the ESNS. But as far as moving out in the future, I think both of those could be fixed fairly easily. As far as processing, I'm going to let Shannon address the processing of those.
Thank you. Shannon?
In the processing, I really like the scanning of the labels from HART. The only thing that I noticed is that we're going to... The only change I would make is that the Election Day registry is separate. That was my only, like, going forward if we go with that product.
Shannon, can you repeat that? You cut out just right at the critical point. So repeat that about Election Day registration.
The only thing, like, if we do go with HART, I would choose to keep Election Day registration stickers on a separate sheet just because it'll just be easier to verify the data when afterwards completed. Other than that, HART was much easier to enter their data. I wasn't hesitant at all. I thought the data was all good and the information. I didn't have any problems. ESNS, because of we had so many issues at the polling location, it was a lot of just double checking, and I didn't really see any difference in time saving to what we used to do. EDRs, election day registrations, were a little bit easier, but other than that, we were still scanning the rosters, and it really didn't seem that much of a time saver and as both the HART was.
Got it. Thank you. Follow up, Gary? Please.
This is Kathy Bonifield. I was wondering if you could tell us how the election judges and the voters responded to the poll books.
The HART poll book, we had when we did the HART training in Dilworth, this is a prime example. She was really hesitant. She's like, if I ever have to work on a computer, it will be the last year I do this. By the first hour, she was asking when she got her turn. they were really user-friendly, and they didn't have any issues. And like Lori said, the support staff that was there was just really phenomenal. The ESNS, they struggled because they were jokingly in training telling us that they had the developer of the product come, and he didn't seem to know much about the day-to-day process of it. So he struggled, and therefore I think our election judges they just didn't have, and like I said, the system itself was so complicated that they ended up kind of bypassing it sometimes, so that's why our data was so kind of conflicting in one polling location. The other polling location did much better, but the data still they tended to have to reboot the system a couple times. So the data was made me a little bit more nervous, I guess is the best way to put it.
Thank you. Great insights. Other questions? Lori, thank you so much for all the work of making this happen and also for your insights. It feels like you guys got very, very important information for us as we consider going forward. Would you like to just hang on and listen for the other presentations and to the meeting for as long as you would like?
Yes, actually, we'd like to listen. So.
Great. Thank you very much. Our next presentation, Christina, was here a few weeks ago from Ramsey County. Thank you for coming and presenting your experience. Lori, can you still hear? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ramsey County was assigned to work with four vendors, Everyone Counts, Elections Systems and Software, HART InterCivic, and Knowing. And in mid-August, Everyone Counts withdrew from the pilot, so we proceeded with ESNS, HART, and Knowing. ESNS was in four of our locations, three in St. Paul, one in St. Anthony. Two of HART's pieces of equipment were in St. Paul, and three of Knowing were in St. Paul. We did reach out to Iowa to view their roster solution. We didn't go forward with that. All of the vendors work directly with Ramsey County. ES&S, HART, and NOINC were diligent in their efforts to make sure that they met the minimum requirements for the pilot. HART was very easy to work with. We had multiple phone conversations, WebEx, and emails throughout the programming process. NOINC was also very easy to work with. They brought new and different ideas within the scope of the pilot to move forward with. And ES&S was very slow with responding to our request. I think it was finally October 11th when we had contact with them. But after that happened, everything was very smooth. They were responsive and worked with us in getting the programming the way we needed it. All of the vendors throughout the pilot were willing to make adjustments to the programming and to make sure that the pilot went as we needed it to go. Training for the e-rosters, ES&S and NOINC conducted the training sessions for our election judges and staff. HART did a train-the-trainer, so Ramsey County did the training for the election judges. We felt that the train-the-trainer was a better approach for our election judges because we already have that rapport with the judges, that relationship is there. So in the future, that would be the way that we would want to move forward. The training materials that were provided, ES&S provided a manual for Ramsey County staff. HART provided a booklet and a PowerPoint, and NOINC provided no printed material because they didn't feel that anything was needed. As far as the election day process, Ramsey County provided all of the data files to the vendor, and the vendors were the point of contact on election day. So what we did is we arranged for the polling place setup to occur the Monday night before election day. A staff member from Ramsey County, the head judge, and the vendor met the head judge at the polling location and set up the devices. And then Ramsey County provided step-by-step instructions for each of the vendors, a flow chart, and then surveys to the voters just to see how the e-rosters were received. And we had more than 900 responses from our voters. And then on the duties for the vendor on election day were to support the election judges and answer questions. They dealt with any equipment issues that occurred. And then they did the supplemental absentee marking on the rosters because we felt that was just one extra thing that the election judges didn't need to do that day. If the judges wanted to assist, they could. And then either the vendor or the head judge returned the equipment on election night to our office. The uploading of the election day registration files, HART had some unnecessary data in the text file that had to be removed. But after that was done, everything went really smooth with HART. Their upload was very good. NOINC had missing data files. Once we figured out what the data files were and they made the corrections, that upload went very well. ES&S, and with NOINC I'll mention, they had some of the election day registrations were not processed electronically because the judge forgot a step. And after talking with NOINC, they said a solution would just be to have the election judge press a process voter. So we didn't have electronic files for all of our election day registrations. And ES&S, for the election day registration identification, we had to manually enter that into the uploaded file because it wasn't programmed to capture the identification used on election day. And then after that was fixed, everything uploaded. So the ease of uploading these files was, that's the way to go. Something that would have been nice is a test environment because then these issues could have been resolved prior to election day. And
Can
then
you
the
unmute
upload-
your phone? This is Lori. I think you might have muted your phone.
Okay, and then if we're to work with any of these voters in the future, or vendors, excuse me, in the future, we're confident in their ability.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And then processing the election day registration records once they have been uploaded, it made it very fast and very easy to work with. What we did when we were processing is we put all of the voter registration cards in alphabetical order because that's how the file was uploaded, and then we just compared everything. There were a few minor issues with the apartment numbers and previous information not pulling through, but reviewing the voter registration card, you were able to make those corrections to the record. Again, a test environment for this would have been helpful to just review and make sure. We feel that all of the vendors moving forward would be able to make the necessary changes and to have a seamless upload into SVRS. Going forward, we feel that the e-rosters were a success in 2013. We would encourage the legislature to continue to authorize this through the 2014 state elections, and we're interested in continuing the use in 2014. On an experimental basis, with a few conditions, having the data available for all of the registered voters prior to Election Day, have the full upload and download features, and eliminating the paper process.
Questions? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you say eliminating the paper process, are you even suggesting, you know, how we had wanted you to have the paper as a backup in case there were any technical issues? Are you even suggesting you would not like that as a backup, or what do you mean exactly when you say that?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Ms. Vanna, what we would see going forward is having the electronic e-roster and the paper roster as a backup, but not doing the dual process.
Gotcha. So, thank you.
Yes.
Other questions? It's clear you folks had to do a tremendous amount of work to make this pilot happen, and a lot of learning has taken place. But 900 voters took time to express their point of view. That's impressive. Any summary, any comments on what you can tell from those?
Sure, Mr. Chair. What we found from that is the redundancy in the process was very frustrating for them. And it caused them to not trust the e-roster because they're having to do the electronic roster, and then they're having to do the paper process. It was a mix of feedback between they really want the technology, or they just, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So, and we had these devices with some of our more seasoned judges and some of our younger judges, and, you know, I think it just depends. It's a change, so I think it's all in how you present it to the voter.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Christina, how many pieces of each equipment did you have in each polling place? How many did you feel was necessary?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Ms. Erickson, in each location, HART provided to pay for two locations. So we did two locations with HART. They were prepared to provide just two units. We paid for an additional unit. So for HART, we had three units. And all of the locations had three units.
Is your impression three is the right number?
I think that'd have to be evaluated depending on the size of the polling location and the number of Election Day registrations. We have some college precincts where I don't think three would be enough. I think we would need at least five to properly process the voters.
So you had a kind of intuition that two was not going to be enough, and you were willing to spend your own money to really test that out. It seems like you have a sense of kind of how many might be needed in even in the bigger precincts or the heavy EDR precincts.
Yes.
Other questions?
Yes,
please.
Mr. Chair,
please introduce yourself for the benefit of
phone
listeners.
Debbie Erickson. Just a question on the EDRs. When you talk about getting rid of the paper process for the signing in of the roster, to have the roster, paper roster as a backup, but use the electronic poll book strictly for signing in. However, you talk about using the voter registration hard copy applications to proof against your electronic files after the upload. Would you recommend getting rid of the hard copies of the voter registrations as well, or did you find that beneficial to have those?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Erickson, I felt it was beneficial to have the Election Day registration copy just for verification and to ensure that the upload was done correctly and that you didn't miss any of the voters from Election Day.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Hey, yep. Mr. Chairman and Christina, I just don't know if you would comment a little bit on we give an approval for ESNS to use the smaller paper for the voter registration printout, kind of like that 4.5-inch wide, like a tape. I'm interested in your comments on that copy of that versus the copy of the 8.5 by 11, a normal-sized application.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Mr. Poser. That size of receipt was a great opportunity to experiment with it. The only issue that I saw was the size of the print was hard to read. And then I think because there were so many steps for the election judge to go through, the driver's license or the last four of the social weren't being recorded. But we did request our judges to review that form and write that in. So we did capture that information on some of the election day registration applications. It wasn't captured. So going forward, I think that it could be a programming thing that we could take care of and make it simpler for the election judges completing it. I like the size of the form. I thought it was a good pilot for that.
Grace Walk Lerowitz. I have a question as far as the time. You had mentioned that three units were encouraged, high EDRs or election day registrations up to five. What kind of timeline did the current units have to make you make those decisions that you would need that many units?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Walker-Rhodes, we looked at the total number of registered voters and the volume of election day registration in 2011 and determined our devices based on the voter registration and the number of registered voters from that. And so that's how we determined three units.
But how did you anticipate how many units? Did you X amount of registered, anticipated new registrations per minute? How did you determine that piece?
Okay, that piece of it, what we did is we looked at the total number, and then we asked the vendor about approximately how long would it take to process a voter on a unit registered versus non-registered.
And what was that timeline?
I don't remember the exact numbers.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Christine, I also would suspect that it's first time, and things always take longer first time. And secondly, you were doing both. And so your quantity is affected by that. That seems reasonable to think that way. And so in a future situation, if you had the electronic, especially for those pre-registered who are already on there, that with a little more experience, some of that sort of thing, and not having two things to do at the same time, that might go a lot faster. So reducing some of the need for more units, maybe?
Yes.
Would you suspect also?
Yes.
Okay.
Max Halpern, regarding the election day registration at heavy precincts, my understanding is that when an election day registration is processed using the poll book, the electronic poll book, the voter is kind of tying up that election judge and that piece of equipment from beginning to end of that process. Is it the case in Ramsey County that in those kinds of precincts with paper EDR, sometimes an election judge would multitask between several voters, give one of them a card, say, go fill out the part you can fill out, come back, work with more than one voter at a time?
The way we did it is the exact same way that we did it. We would do it with the paper process. And so with the e-rosters, what we did is we had two units dedicated to pre-registered rosters and one unit dedicated to election day registration. On the higher volume years, we put more election judges on the election day registration, and there is a greeter judge. So, yes, individuals that are coming into the precinct that aren't registered are given the voter registration card and can approach the non-registered table with a completed voter registration application, eliminating that step.
Right. So if in the traditional case, they may already have completed the card before they approach a judge, is there then a potential that you might not only need a higher number of computer systems, but also perhaps more election judges than would be the case with paper process?
Possibly. I think it depends on the system and the ability of the election judges and what functionalities the e-rosters have to pre-populate the voter registration applications.
As well, presumably, as what fraction of your election day registrants have up-to-date driver's license or state ID card to pre-populate it from.
Yeah.
But I think it's important for the task force that we understand number of election judges might sometimes even go up rather than down.
Mm-hmm. It very well could.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think also when I look at you have an expense of more election judges or you have more equipment, but they kind of will have a tendency to maybe have an effect there. So I think you could have, just like you have more election judges, you can for those high volume. I think of the student ones where you really have the high volume. But I would suppose also the value here is the back-end data entry and hiring of data entry people if you do it on paper. I would suspect from what you've said on the ease of uploading that having that effort done on Election Day has a value to you versus hiring people afterwards to take those papers, and then you don't have the voter there to say, yeah, that's the right spelling of my name, yes, it's the right address and some of that. Though those are offsetting, would you suspect, maybe, on costs, possibly?
I think it's too early to determine the costs and moving forward. I think having the upload is something that will create more accurate statistics and quicker results for the elections. I think that we need to continue moving forward to address some of those and have more information on that.
That's very fair. Thank you.
Just to touch base on that, too, and I'm speculating that because you can pre-populate, even if it isn't accurate information like a change of address, it's quicker and more efficient to change a few fields in an existing record than to have to handwrite everything, like, for example, in the new registration roster. So even though it may take time, I speculate it probably be a trade-off between what we did paper-wise versus electronic. However, our data will be more accurate.
Yes, I would agree.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
for all the work. David, you've agreed to present on behalf of Hennepin County. Thank you.
Yes, Hennepin County couldn't be here today, so I got some notes from Susan Fritzy, who's the deputy elections manager, who I work very closely on through the project, so I'll just kind of go through her notes. Originally, Hennepin County was working with four vendors, Data Card, Election Administrators, Votech, and SOE. And then in August and September, DataCard and Votech both withdrew. DataCard told me they withdrew because they didn't have the resources to devote to do the pilot project with the way they wanted to do it. And then Votech told me that they couldn't program for Election Day registration, so they didn't want to participate. When DataCard dropped out, I went with Hart because Hart basically, I had worked with them prior on one of our pilot projects, and I knew their product was pretty much ready for Minnesota. So in Hennepin County, Elections Administrators was used in 5 of our precincts in Minnetonka, Hart was used in 2, and SOE was used in 2 precincts in St. Anthony. We worked with all the vendors basically through WebEx demonstrations. Initially, the focus was really on getting the vendors to understand Minnesota election laws and some of the quirks of our law. Towards the end, it was much more technical, making sure that their product did what we needed it to do. Susan mentions that things went smoothest with SOE, and I suspect that's because St. Anthony City Clerk is superior to Minnetonka City Clerk. They have a city clerk that's much easier to work with. The training was done differently by the vendors. Hart trained the trainer, which I think Christina mentioned, meaning they trained me and then I trained our election judges. Election administrators conducted a training. The vendor conducted a training, and it was so, I didn't think it was good enough, so I eventually did a second training for our election judges. SOE, the vendor, did all the training, and it apparently went very well. As far as the election day processes, the cities are primarily responsible for determining how we're going to use the products, and it sounds like St. Anthony did something very similar to what we did in Minnetonka. Hart had two units in our polling places. SOE apparently had two poll books in each of the St. Anthony precincts. Election administrators, we went with one unit in our precincts, and that was my choice. I wanted to see if we could use one unit for both election day registration and pre-registered, and it turned out we couldn't. It really was not the way to go. I think the thing I want to point out from Susan is she thought the uploading the information on election day registrations is, she says, a very quick and easy process. She estimates if we were to do this in a state election for Hennepin County, it would take them a day to do the upload, primarily to make sure that the number of election day registrations actually match the number of election. They want to do some type of audit before they begin processing. As far as this pilot, the data from SOE, Susan mentions, was entirely clean. The upload went without any glitches. Hart's had extra data, and then the data we got from election administrators was very spotty. The county had to work a lot with it to make it work. She thinks the processing itself would save the county a lot of time, simply because obviously you don't have to do all the data entry work, and so she's was very encouraged by the pilot project.
Questions for David?
Just a brief one.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Maeda, in terms of the smaller receipt kind of paper, net-net, what did you think? Were you okay with it, even though it kind of curled up and had those issues?
Senator Bonoff, we actually had, with the two different vendors, they had two different solutions. Hart was, they used labels that we stuck on paper, and I thought that worked very well. The election administrators did have that receipt that rolled up, and that, yeah. Well, first of all, because the law required that the full voter oath be on the receipts were really long, and we ran out of paper constantly through the day because the receipts had to have so much information on it. But, yeah, I think it would be problematic to have that type of paper be some type of record that we needed to access.
Mr. Maeda, this is Max Halperin. While we're on the topic of printing, I'm curious whether you know anything or had received any information about the durability, longevity of those. The law, as I understand, is they have to be retained 22 months or until contest is over. Do we have reason to believe that all these printing technologies would remain legible over that kind of period?
Mr. Halperin, that's a very good question. The vendor that election administrators told me that their tape should last without problem the 22 months we have to retain it. The information should still be legible. But I know from our experience with our tabulators where we have tape with the results, it does fade after a period of time, so that would be an issue.
Mr. Chairman, if Clay County is on the line, I'd like to ask them kind of that same question about the size of the tape. I know the Minnetonka ones here, I know we're talking about the oath, which was on printed out, but Clay County also had the ESNS, which they also then used that size of tape for the election day registration form itself. So I'd be curious on Clay's interpretation or what your thoughts were on the width of the using that for an election day registration form.
Ms. Johnson, you there?
Yeah, the size, that worked fine for us. You know, it's not as easy as the big sheet, but it certainly was a workable solution.
Great, thank you.
Mr. Chair, and this is addressed to anyone who could answer. Did anyone else use the label option? And if so, how did that work?
I believe it was Hart.
Right.
Yeah, the story with Clay. We had the labels, and that actually worked out to be the best rather than those smaller forms, I think.
Maybe.
Thank you. Thank you again to Mr. Poser and his staff and all the staff around the various sites. This was a big project, but a lot of information and it seems like we've heard some affirmation of desire to continue and experiment in some more high volume, so there's a lot of information for us to consider. Moving to the next part of our agenda is kind of fundamental questions. There were three requests for additional information before and right after the last meeting. The first one was the question about had anyone else other than Indiana developed any certification tests or protocols for certification on the e-poll books. To our knowledge, only Indiana has, and we have a few copies of some of that, but it's a long document, and we're going to send you the email or the link. It's fascinating, but it is also, you know, kind of a very big effort. I have not been able to get more information about where did it come from and how did it get authorized and all of that, but we do have a limited number of printed, the kind of guts of it, and we will send you out the full URL. So to our knowledge, that's the only one that we know about. There was a second request for just general information from other states. There have been a lot of states experimenting with or going whole hog, and you have a spreadsheet of the information gathered by Mr. Poser and his staff from the states who responded. Mr. Poser, is there anything in this that you found more interesting than normal, want to highlight, call our attention to?
Mr. Chairman, I guess there would be two things. I think there are two states that have some type of a requirement for e-poll book use. I think you'll notice on Maryland, they just say they're required for all jurisdictions. So on the second page, you'll see that Maryland requires all of their jurisdictions to use it, and so it didn't matter if they were large, medium, or small. Everybody had to use them in Maryland. The other one that had some type of requirement was Georgia on the first page, where they did require it for federal and state and county elections, but they didn't require it for some of the other municipal elections by itself. Other than that, every other state, if they were allowing them, it was always an optional use. And I think in some of those, you'll see that it was the larger or medium-sized jurisdictions that had the heavier use of them. Most of the ones, if they were optional, you'd see that it was, you know, 50% or less of the smaller jurisdictions that would use them. I think that's probably the most that you could, that I kind of gathered from the just looking at the replies.
Yeah, and that seemed to echo what we hear also in Minnesota townships and smaller. It just, yeah. I think there's a wealth of experience in other states. Some states have been doing this for quite a while, but I also think the vendors have evolved, and I think we are the beneficiaries of some of those vendors really having produced much better products by the time we're doing this. So, yes, David?
The one thing I'd point out is I think the only other jurisdiction that's done Election Day registration is Washington, D.C., because I know they have Election Day registration and they use poll books, but I think that's the most complicated part of our state doing it. It's the part that the vendors have the most difficult time both understanding what our requirements are and then programming their devices to allow for it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because for us it's probably the place with some of the most important savings. So it's an interesting opportunity. And yeah.
Can you define large, medium, and small jurisdiction?
Yeah, we didn't really ask them to when we just did the survey. I mean, it's really small, medium, large within their own state, which, you know, can be a different distinction from North Dakota to Maryland, I think. But, yeah, there was no qualification that said what was meant by large.
The third question people ask, we all know that in the last big election, it was the first election under the new redistricted polling places. And the question was asked, what was the occurrence of Election Day registration in wrong polling places? And one of the benefits that at least some of the vendors pointed to was the possibility of both more accuracy and also providing information. Mr. Poser was able to gather that 2012 information. I mean, again, it's you know, it partially reflects just where are the election day registrations and where are there very few. But, Mr. Poser, anything interesting or catch your eye in this?
Mr. Chairman and members, I guess I would reiterate that 2012 was a redistricting in a presidential year, which happens every 20 years. So I think you get a high number of election day registrations. And then, you know, with the redistricting, if this is a large number, and but I think it's exaggerated a little bit because it was presidential in a redistricting year. So just want to mention that. Otherwise, the other part to also kind of take note of here, I guess, is you know, there can be multiple reasons why somebody needs to be in a different precinct. Sometimes it needs to be because there is a different legislative district or different county commissioner district, and so, you know, a voter going to the wrong polling place might be then getting the wrong ballot for the wrong commissioner or the wrong legislative district. Sometimes there's just population-wise that you would want to have you know, different multiple precincts, and so some of these could be people who they voted in the wrong polling place, but they got exactly the same ballot that they would have gotten if they had gone to the right place. So I just want to kind of make note of that doesn't mean that all of these people got wrong ballots. And then the other part I do want to also mention is that when the counties enter these election day registrations, the first thing they do is choose which precinct they're entering these cards from, and then that's how the system knows and says, well, I look at the precinct finder and, you know, this person voted in the wrong polling place. And that's what generated these numbers. I'll say that occasionally when a county, when somebody in the staff finishes one precinct and they go to the next precinct, they will forget to change which precinct they say they're entering for. And so the system still registers them in the right precinct where they're supposed to be, but because they didn't say, I'm now changed to this new precinct, it's going to generate this wrong polling place letter because the system thought they entered it in a different mm-hmm. precinct. So another part here is that some of these numbers can be a little high in some areas just because people did as they were doing their input.
So, Mr. Poser, this is all of these would be election judge error. Would training be a cost-effective aspect of this? I mean, we're trying to figure out about cost, benefits, et cetera.
Mr. Chairman, say that yes, all of these are then something that could have been caught by an election judge looking at a precinct finder and making sure that the person was in the right polling place before they registered on them on election day. I guess I'll say that human beings, what it is, and the amount of volume that can be happening, I'd say human nature is that mistakes are always going to be made. I know myself, even after 20 years, you know, if I'm looking for a voter in a particular precinct and doing some of our internal testing, I've done that myself, where you need to specifically look to see that this street has an odd or an even designation on it, and it's only the even numbers in this precinct, in this street, that go in this precinct. And there are just times when, you know, you're looking and you look at the piece of paper and you just don't see that even or the odd, and you know, mistakes are going to happen. So yes, training is a big piece, but I think I don't think training can ever solve all of those issues.
Can I just, yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may just add to Mr. Poser's comments, he's exactly right that training may help some of those issues. Resources and tools are another thing that we can give them. Precinct finders in the polling places, they can have access to the polling place finder on the web to give the voters the correct information. However, there's always times when new addresses have been added, new developments are made, those streets haven't been entered yet because we haven't been notified of that as well. So we can give them as much information as possible, and I'm sure Ms. Bonifield can certify to that as well. But there's always the human aspect that comes along too. So,
Senator?
One of the things I observed in going to the polling places in the electronic roster methodology is that it takes a little bit of the human side out of it, but making sure they're in the right precinct. Was there anybody who had done these pilots, Mr. Maeda or something like that, that could address this issue on an e-poll book? Did you have some experience? I know you had one precinct where you actually had some election judges, as they adapted during the day, that they went out front and did a little pre-work or something.
Yeah, Senator Kipmer, what An interesting thing I saw on Election Day, the polling place we had in our community center, I went down there right away, and we had a check-in desk because we have three precincts in that room. And we had, so we had a table set out front where two election judges would look, direct the voter to the correct, the right one of the three precincts. And we started off in the morning with a paper precinct binder. And by the time I had left in the morning, they had directed a couple people to the wrong place because it was the odd even issue where if you were living on the odd numbered side of the street, you voted in the community center. If you voted, lived on the even side, you actually were in a polling place that was outside the building, and they had sent somebody outside the building that had to then come back because they were correctly in the community center and should have been allowed to vote there. But by noon, I had an extra tablet from election administrators that we basically used as an electronic precinct binder. And when we switched over, the election judges just, I mean, they were very grateful because it's so much easier, and it was impossible to make a mistake because you type in the address and it tells you the polling place you're supposed to be in, so you can't make the mistake they're making on the paper. So I think it would be an interesting use of the technology.
Mm-hmm. I observed the training of election judges down in Iowa, and what was exciting is that in that training, if someone went to the wrong precinct, there was a printout and you could give them the address. Well, as an election judge, you use the precinct finder, then you have to go to the next step and figure out where the polling place is, and then you have to go to the next step and write down that information for the voter so they know where to go, where with the poll book, it was just push a button, print, here you go, that's where you need to go. So I thought that was really efficient and could open up a lot of time for places where there's voters that go to the wrong precinct.
Mr. Chair, just to get a couple things straight in the record, although I think I'm not disagreeing with anything on the substance of this. One, you had asked the question whether it was the case that all of these were election judge error that are on Mr. Poser's tabulation, and I think he essentially agreed with you on that, but had just shortly before said that, in fact, some of these may be artifacts not of election judge error but of county election administrator error with regard recording which precinct the VRA came from. Is that right? Correct,
that's
Mr.
true.
Poser?
Yes.
So not all of these, in fact, reflect election right. judge error.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, if I can, Mr. Helfgren's piece, I think we can also draw a parallel to saying that even in the polling place, then if the electronic poll book would prevent somebody from registering in the wrong polling place, I think the next piece would say that the uploading of these files then to the county would get them into the right precinct, and it would eliminate the other error of the county or staff choosing, you know, putting them into the wrong precinct. So I guess it's not all election judge error, but the human error, I think all of these would be human error that could be addressed or eliminated through an electronic process.
And then the other thing is that we would ensure 100% consistency that the address that was entered matched the precinct. That's different from correctness, that if, for example, we have two similar named streets, perhaps one's a way and one's a street or those kinds of things that are in different precincts, you could have an error in the entry of the address, which we would have a correct match between the address as entered and the precinct, but still an incorrect precinct for the voter.
Great. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I can just draw one more thing. I also, you'll notice that there was an error, an average percentage in the bottom right-hand corner of here, the 1.86%. I did, just prior to coming here, look at the Hennepin and Ramsey number just to see if this was more of a metro problem versus a statewide problem. And interestingly enough, both Hennepin and Ramsey are underneath the 1.86 percentage. Hennepin was basically at 1.5 and Ramsey was at 1.67. So both of the larger metro counties were below the statewide average here, so to speak. So I think it still goes to show this is a statewide issue and not a metro issue.
Thank you. So the bulk of our time for the rest of this meeting is looking at kind of the critical questions that have been emerging as we've continued our conversation and as we've had presentations. And I've kind of just kind of summarized them here in a handout that's in your packet, questions for discussion. And, you know, some of these we may spend a lot of time on. Some of these we may be able to go through pretty quickly. But they give us the raw material for being able to come back with a beginning draft report. They give us the raw material for discussion about what we might want to recommend. But also they help summarize if we do need any more data or further discussion or further consideration. So I'm assuming these will surface some other questions, and just kind of want to take them one at a time, top to bottom, and see if we can get through them today. That would be great. I mean, the first one we actually heard little bits about in the presentation today, but authorizing another pilot, of course. This task force is not responsible for the pilot, but we were, of course, very interested in the pilot. And I think we've learned a lot, but what is what's the thinking about suggesting the authorization of another pilot? Pre-registered voters, 2014 will be a general election. It'll be a big one. Thoughts?
Mr. Chair, if I may, from the county's perspective, we would be interested in seeing an additional pilot during a regular statewide election, probably 2014 November election, using both pre-registered and election day registration in order to get the full understanding of what the benefits of the system are in the polling place, as well as the administrative benefits that would be to the counties on the back end and the beginning side of the system. We think it's important to look at what that would look at. We would like to recommend the pilot include both metro and outstate counties and large and small jurisdictions to see what the benefit would be. A little bit more expanded from what this pilot was. We got the bones of it, the framework, the understanding of what it can do, and now we would like to see as counties what that would look like in a practical sense.
Mr. Chair, I agree it would be very useful to see what happens in a full-scale statewide general election. I'm not convinced that 2014 is the right one to do that in. We would all like to see it happen sooner rather than later, I'm sure, but we also need to make sure we don't do it too soon before we're ready, able to do it right. The pilot that was done this year, the amount of time that existed from when the statute was passed until when the election was held was short enough that a number of problems resulted. Some of them were ones that impeded our ability to really gain full useful information from the pilot because the software did not have all the features that the full software would have, because the uploading was not done the way it will be done, because there were things that just weren't as they will be. So that impeded the usefulness for information. It also was the case that the smooth operation of the polling places was affected by that short timeline. The fact that, as we heard today, the training was not entirely adequate. The fact that, as we heard today, some of the swiping of cards wasn't working properly. Things like that. And so if we're going to do another pilot, I would like to see it give us really full, useful information on the system as it would really be, and not, again, kind of a thrown-together thing. And if we're going to do it in a statewide general election where there's a ton of voters showing up, I would hate to see, again, disruptions to the operation of the polling place from things not being fully trained or fully functional. And the timetable from when the legislature meets in the spring to when the election is held in the fall isn't going to be any longer in 2014 than it was in 2013. So I'm not sure we'll be ready.
Well, Mr. Chair, probably won't be a surprise to you that I see it a little bit differently, and that I had hoped that we It was a short time frame, and I knew that, but I had hoped that we would have been able to start that programming process so that we didn't have some of the haphazard put-together processes that everybody made work, and it was outstanding. But again, I had really hoped that we would have used our best efforts to try and get that done. I think for us to say that we need another small pilot to get this done right overlooks the fact that, in reality, Minnetonka has been trying this for like 3 years, and this is being done all over the country. So I'm not one that believes we ought to mandate it at this point, but I think that we do have the critical information and the knowledge and the experience of what worked and what didn't work to the point where we should proceed as though it was optional statewide. So I would not be sitting here thinking that it would be smart to do another small pilot. That would be my own view.
Mr. Chair, I kind of agree with Max over here, especially then if we were doing kind of a pilot at this site, but we didn't have the ability to have the data downloaded from the Secretary of State to the sites. We had to jerry-rig that again, which Minnetonka has been doing all these years. We want to get beyond that. We don't want to just do continuing jerry-rigging. So if it takes the time to get this so that we can upload and download and do it right, why wouldn't we want to do it that way? Why would we want to continue just jerry-rigging it?
Well, to that point, Mr. Chair, I thought that's what I was saying, Representative Lynn. I was saying we should do it right, and we should be ready for the next day. I would not support in any way another jury-rigged process.
And then, Mr. Chair, in that note, I think it takes some time then for the software to be developed to be able to upload the data properly across the whole state. And that's probably the most important thing that we'd have to do next, which takes time, and I don't think it could be done from the time the legislature passes something until a few months later, another election. So that's what gives me pause as far as the timing goes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think somewhat of this, I think that we learned so much. You can't judge the next situation that's going to be the same because so much was learned from this by both vendors, by the counties, by election judge. It was a very successful pilot in that regard and hugely important because this is the hardest one, you might say. This is the one where you really found out, and there's only one way you can do that, and that is by having it as well-controlled, well-documented, and very good that way. But I do think that one of the questions I have, because it's up here, is pre-registered voters, and I would include EDRs also, both of them, in a mock election. And my question for the counties or any of the local jurisdictions who are here, because of what you learned already in the pilot, if you did a mock one with both of those, the question I still have, though, is would you do multiple vendors or choose one? Because I know this from vendors. You're either going to have to, this time was more of a freebie where they got value from having a mock election with their equipment, and they were willing to do that. If you're asking for a full adaptation in a pilot, they'd have to invest money in order to do that programming, or you've got to pay them all. And so I think one of my first questions is going to be narrowing down your vendors or the design build process, because we are so unique in regards to what we do. You're going to have to invest quite a bit of money in any other official vendor that you have right now in order to get them ready for that. We have a system already, and I think my question is, and Commissioner Parnell, we brought it up the last time, is the first thing is to do a design build, because it really makes a difference to everything else that you do, which is if you do a build and put it as a component on SVRS, one of the advantages there is SVRS already uploads and has experience with uploading because of SVRS. That's in election results, but also for the rosters, the paper roster. So there's some synergy that you get from that, and I would really like us to take a look at something like a design build, because you can do another pilot, but are you going to have five vendors again? Will they want to do that? Will you... The whole cost, I just run into those kind of practical things. So I would rather kind of back up a little bit and talk about design build, get that done. And I think there's, as Minnetonka did before, the issue there was they could do the electronic poll book locally, but the value to them as far as uploading. With what we have done already, in the uploading and downloading, this is a question for Mr. Maeda, because you have the most experience. Even if you chose your own vendor and you wanted to do it for 2014, just like you did before in 12 and 10 and other elections that you did, is there enough experience with the downloading and uploading that you might be able to see some benefit in 2014? It's a big open question, just starting there.
Senator Kiffner, I would concur with what Senator Bonhoff and Representative Lane, and I think you mentioned, that if we're moving ahead, the piece that's really missing is the clean, getting the file from SBRS, the process for getting the actual pre-registered file onto the poll book. That's the piece that's still out there that we need to, if we do anything going forward, I think that's the piece that we need to get to. I will say one of my biggest frustrations in this was I thought DataCard and I were so close to being, like, ready for the prime time. And then when they dropped out because of lack of resources, it was then having to go back down square one with other vendors to get them up to where I thought DataCard and Minnetonka were. And so your idea of this design build, I think, is intriguing to me because I kind of feel burned with – that's just the nature of working with a private – vendor is if they decide it doesn't make sense to them business-wise, they can drop out and then we're left with nothing. So I don't know if that answered what you asked. But.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I think it did. I think that the downloading and uploading is a technical behind-the-scenes more process that can be done by the Secretary of State Office and counties or whoever. They can do that. Even without a pilot. I mean, this is something that is a part of service and the system, what you do. But if you, the next question is some of the features which are having to do with the election judges and some of the things that you do there. But I just know vendors, they are probably not going to be so interested in spending a lot of money making their system work for you to pilot, and then you might not choose them. Our question is, well, will they be in business even when we get to that point? So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what one of my recommendations would be, a design build. I don't know if it takes authority of the legislature to do that or if that is something...
You could just get on with.
Just do it, yes.
The notion of a mock election with a full build... Has anybody thought this through, what that looks like, how you go to a football game? Or
wouldn't that, Mr. Chairman, involve an in-house design almost?
You'd build? Have the full thing developed. You just wouldn't have a November or August. I mean, I'm assuming that a mock election is fully done and you've got enough people to make it feel like a real election. But I'm not aware of how that sort of, has anyone done that? Is that something that we could pull off? Is it something like at the state fair where you got a ton of people?
Yep. Well, Mr. Chairman, just some experience with that, and Debbie, I think you know too, right? We've done, when SVRS was first there, we did a stress test, run through everything. We had a day where you tried to do that. It's never exactly the same as the vagaries that a real election brings to you.
Fortunately.
But it does, it's a process thing. The basic thing is, like what you had mentioned with some of the issues that came out, that a mock election, just the process, you know, does, and sometimes you can have a spreadsheet where you try and think of all the various complications that could come up. You do your best with that. but it's probably as close as you can get. The big thing is that there's less risk because you don't have actual real voters. Mm-hmm. You can take more time sometimes to do troubleshooting and stuff. I think it's a very valuable part of it. Highly recommend it. But again, you still run into in-house build. The difference from some other states is we already have an in-house system that was built by the state. Others don't always have that. So
correct.
It we're kind of unique in that regard.
Mr. Posner and then Senator Bonoff.
Karen, so I think there's a few things that, you know, just because we have a statewide registration system, I think this, just like our election reporting system, is a completely separate system that is interrelates and might trade data back and forth. It's still its own separate system that's been built. And I would think, you know, if you're talking about building a state system to do e-poll book functions, that to me would be a completely separate system that would be built, and we would still be trading. Just like we would be downloading files to a vendor here, we would be having to download files to whatever this sort of system is. So I think you're really talking two things here. Number one, we need to program SVRS to download the files to be able to get the pre-registered voters to an e-poll book, and we need to program SVRS to bring back the voting history. And we need to do that regardless if we are doing a vendor or whether we are doing you know, something that the state is building for an e-poll book piece. So, you know, by saying doing a state build, you're really multiplying what would need to be done on the state level to get that all up and ready. So,
Proposer, those two things we'll need to do no matter what.
We will need to do the programming SVRS to download
and
the files to whoever's going to take it to bring back. Yes, we'll need to do that regardless if it's a vendor or not. Or a state system. So I guess, you know, part of that also comes into the pros and cons of doing a state build versus having vendors do it, is the vendors have already invested a lot in programming e-poll books for use for vendors, which, you know, we would then have to try and figure out all of that behind-the-scenes stuff that we've never attempted to do before. You know, I guess the other part is just timing-wise. I guess the timeline would be very important as far as, you know, if you're looking at doing anything for a design build, because, of course, anytime the legislature would make a change to the election system, not only would we be changing SVRS and our current election reporting system, but then we would also be making changes to this poll book system all at the same time. So, you know, I think that would just
keep you up at night.
Need that there would need to be a lot more resources on the state side if you're adding a completely new system to one of the things that we would need to do.
Senator Bonna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that does get to the question of what authority does the Secretary of State's office have to proceed with making sure the uploading and downloading can happen. You know, is it really necessary to have legislation directing that effort? I can understand if more money is needed to make that happen, then, you know, you'd have to go back to the legislature. So that's an open question in my mind. In addition, if you do the software programming necessary to do the uploads and the downloads, I don't know that the scale matters because it has to be done, and you have to do it for the state process. And so, again, the idea of piloting versus not piloting, I just question if the work gets done, wouldn't it be available for anybody who chooses to participate? I do agree if there's some way to, as you're doing it, you can mock what you're doing to make sure it works. That's always desirable, I think, in, you know, any project. And then I guess a direct question for Commissioner Parnell. If you could, Commissioner Parnell, address in just, you know, your mind a design build of this effort, can you talk about, you know, timing and project? And I hate to put you on the spot. But.
No, that's fine. I'm used to being put on the spot.
Okay.
You know, as I look at the rest of these questions here, there's a whole lot of factors that would whole lot of factors that actually would define the scope of the project, whether it's a pilot or not, and the security requirements. So I think some of these questions are getting ahead of what we would need to look at. Now, IT follows what the business requirements are for any kind of system like that. And I think the last meeting I talked about how useful it is to do a build or buy analysis. And I think that you're still going to need some of those requirements ahead of time, whether it's an RFP that you put out for a vendor for a pilot or whether you want to build it yourself. So I think it's a little early in the game to have any kind of decision. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the fact of how interconnected are they going to be is huge. Depending on what that decision is, you're adding huge complexity and cost. So
it seemed like there are lots of other parts of the questions, and maybe we move to the second question, and knowing that we're basically mining thoughts and information, and mandatory or voluntary, we got a little bit of a picture from other states. There have been plenty of strong comments about it, at least on occasion in our hearings. Your thoughts about if mandatory all elections, if mandatory all polling places? I haven't heard much.
Voluntary?
That's what I've heard. So let's move to the third question. Same-day registration and pre-registered voters, paper backup for pre-registered voters, paper VRA for same-day registrants. We had some interesting elements of the reports on this. More thoughts? Christina gave us an interesting view from the voters' perspective on this.
Mr. Chair, I think the voters were frustrated with having to do redundant, you know, maybe sign a printed label and sign a traditional roster, or sign a signature capture pad and a printout and a traditional roster with the ESNS. I think they were literally signing three times. That was frustrating for sure. But that there be some piece of paper, maybe that's the one and only signature is on that one sheet of paper, I don't think that's particularly frustrating. And I would strongly advocate that we still have a paper trail for both pre-registered voters and election day registrants. It's an important component of auditability, security, allowing ordinary non-technical people to have confidence that the system is working without understanding the guts of what's going on behind the scenes. I think that the number of different kinds of contingencies it protects you against is kind of, you know, limitless. You don't have to imagine all of what could go wrong. You know that whatever it is that does go wrong, you've got the paper. And that's important, because it's always the contingencies you hadn't thought of that are the ones that bite you. The other thing I would say is that if we do have paper, we should probably put in place, as part of what's in statute or at minimum in rule, what the expectations are for auditing the paper against what is uploaded. We heard that some of that was happening on a kind of ad hoc basis during the pilot. I think we should specify what we expect.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's two pieces as I'm listening to Mr. Hilfgren talk about the paper backup for the pre-registered voters. I think what Mr. Hilfgren is referring to is if somebody did come in and vote, they found them on the roster. If they printed out a label, they could stick that label on the sheet, and the person could still sign that sheet, and that's your paper to know who has kind of voted that day. I think the other piece that's kind of necessary is, you know, right now all of the pre-registered voters then were on the e-poll book, and so what type of backup do you need if the poll book isn't operational, and what's required to have of a paper backup of who the list of all the registered voters are, and what is your process if the system does go down and now you're referring back to this paper list? how are you tracking those then that actually voted? And maybe it is on that same type of a paper thing, and rather than the label, you're handwriting all of those out. I don't know, but I think that's something that this task force needs to say is, what is the backup if the system itself is down, not just what paper the system itself can produce.
Agreed.
See a lot of heads nodding.
Mr. Chairman, I think we agree with that. I think about the only thing people that the voters didn't want to do was a parallel system on a routine basis. So I think what Mr. Poser's talking about is more of a backup, fail-safe backup, not a routine part. Everything's all go, then we just have one.
Agreed.
And Mr. Chair, obviously it goes without saying we have to have redundancy, because we would never want to have a situation where you have a technological failure and now the integrity of your election is called into question.
Build or buy e-poll software? We were partly into this. There are questions about functionality required by statute, OSS, other vendor. We talked about the fact that there are some elements of this that have to be done, the uploading and downloading, but then there's the thing in the middle. I was a little surprised. I'd say, yeah, surprised at just the difference of the evaluation of the different vendors. Sometimes you think, well, they're all going to be about the same, but one will be a red car and one will be a white car and a blue car, and that was just not the report. Yeah. So anyhow, by limitations on the type certification, it does move us into some of the questions about how much diversity in terms of who gets to use it in the state on a voluntary basis is one thing. How much diversity in terms of vendors and machines and potential differences due to different vendors and different machines is another question. And I think I don't know the full experience around the country, but I do know there's been in some states quite a bit of diversity in the vendors and who got what territory, and there were some problems with that. But, you know, you have bidding processes that are independent. Are there other thoughts, other comments in this general area, build or buy, that e-book?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I would be interested, Mr. Poser, in whether or not you know if any of these other states had gone through this process of a build or buy and made a decision accordingly.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Parnell, I guess I would answer that by saying I don't know of any state that's built their own e-poll book other than what we saw kind of in Iowa, where some of the counties built their own. Otherwise, I don't
think it's the only one.
Right. That was I do not know of any other jurisdiction that's built their own. They've all gone with some type of vendor.
Okay, thank you.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I see, you know, I look at the pros and the cons and trying to look out a little bit more long-term, because sometimes you build your own and there are issues with that, and you go through a vendor and there are issues with that. So you probably are. It's like choose your poison kind of a thing as far as what you want. Some things are more within your control and some things are not. And when it comes to elections, I don't like things that are not, because it's just a one-day responsibility and it's just so crucial. And so I always tend to find those things in that sort of way. But there are kind of things that you go through no matter what. But I noticed that the upload and the download needed to be done no matter what. Requirements needed to be done no matter what. But some of these things are like if you found some of these things are the vendors met the legal requirements, but it was user-friendly, which worked the smoothest, which was the easiest for election judges, some of those kind of things rather than was it legal. Yeah, it was legal, but what kind of worked most smoothly for us. And the one issue that I see after a part of this, though, is that, you know, when you look at some of the funding down there, who pays? If the state owns the software, then it can be there and available for every jurisdiction, whether they wanted it or not, and you kind of have a level playing field there. If you have, you know, some other arrangement, how does the state or does the state do anything? In other words, the upload and download is done by the state.
And if the jurisdiction wants to do a poll book, then they contract with the vendor their choice as long as it meets the legal requirements, and the user-friendliness is up to them as far as what works in their particular county. Those are some kinds of things that I just wanted to just kind of say have some pros and cons, and even a con could be a pro for somebody else because it gives them a county control or immediacy. I didn't know if Mr. Maeda had anything because of your experiences to comment in that regard.
Senator Kipler, I totally agree with what you just said. There are definitely advantages of doing either one. If we went with a state design build, then it is an even playing field for the entire state. Any jurisdiction that wanted to use it could use it, but then you're limited to whatever decision is made on how the state system is designed, then everyone's limited to that. Whereas it would be nice to have flexibility if I wanted some functionality that Minneapolis didn't need or vice versa. It would be nice to be able to work that flexibility into it. So that's a totally wishy-washy answer to your question. But yeah, there are definitely advantages either way.
I also concur. It's what's good, what's bad, but I would think that we would want to examine what are our business requirements with our own SVRS system. What are the basics that we need to upload and download, and the basic requirements that if we do it in-house or with vendors, it's consistent. So if you have your basic standards that if we choose to go down the route, yes, we'll do it in-house, or if we have those standards and it's very clear and compatible for vendors to address, then we have that option as well. So we need to look at how flexible is the system internally in order to garner those. Because I'm real concerned, too, with the fact that we had a lot of our vendors that spent a lot of time this last 2013 election, learned our process. We did have some positive comments on the usability, and I hate to just throw that away because we're going to go down a different path. So I'd like to be able to keep vendors' options open and have that flexibility going forward.
Mr. Chair, one of the concerns I have around the degree of local differentiation is the degree of sophistication with regard to who's in charge of those elections. And so I think that varies place by place. And so while I appreciate the importance of each local government unit to have their flexibility, I think it also that as a state, we need to set a standard around quality control. And so I guess I envision, perhaps in the best of all possible worlds, an RFP process whereby there are design parameters, whereby there's a basic structure or skeleton, and then within that the local jurisdictions can make their, you know, flexible changes. So, and that I know that's very vague, but I guess what I'm saying is, yes, it's important for flexibility, but we also have a Minnesota standard.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Senator Bronoff, you're exactly right that there are varying levels of sophistication is a very good way of putting it, and ability to spend time and do things in different counties. Counties are responsible for a number of different things, and in some counties they are lucky to have a dedicated resource for elections, in others they are not. So by giving the standards and giving parameters, one of the things we've been trying to do throughout the state on a number of different things with regard to elections are setting best practices, setting standards so that we're all doing basically the same thing the same way instead of so many varied ways. So that's a very good point.
It seems like the next topic is one of those big elements of that, standards and requirements. The security issues are, you know, things that are raised. So maybe we can take a look at that. I mean, that would be one of the main, whatever we were doing, security would be one of the main right there along with how it goes with our training and everything else.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'll just lead off with a sort of general comment about security, which is that we need to understand that security is an ongoing expense, not a one-time expense. That if your mental picture of a secure computer system is a bank vault, which is a very expensive room to build, that's wrong. You should more have the bank guards in mind. They're going to need to be staff, qualified staff, who on an ongoing basis are ensuring not only that the technical specifications of the system continue to be appropriate for a changing threat environment, but also that it continues to be configured, set up, operated, trained in secure ways, and that it continues to be monitored so that if something anomalous is happening, somebody notices it and can respond appropriately to it. And, you know, that leads into a later question of ours about costs. But I think we should be very aware that security is something that will continue to need budgeting for election cycle after election cycle.
I will point the second bullet on here is if it should be a single use or if we should be able to use the device for other things. In our city, the only way I've been able to do what we've been doing is I couldn't justify having laptops devoted for elections for the one day. So what happens with our laptops the rest of the year is our fire department uses it for their emergency management training. So the laptops have multiple uses, and I'm fully cognizant of security that we don't want these laptops being hackable or having people access the information on there without some security controls in place. But getting to the cost, the only way a city could afford to do this, I think, is if the devices can be used for other things.
Well, I think there are different ways you can do this. One way is to lease equipment if you really wanted just a single-use kind of a thing. But even then, after it's been used, you have to make sure that the vendor you lease from, well, at least if you have it within your county and it's, again, under your control, you can have some of that even better than having it go outside. So just about whatever you do that you have that, but I think it should be wrapped around no matter what we do. No matter what we do, that we wrap it around both with our training and our people, our processes, and then the equipment itself, and again, process to go with it, and then the location. So you have the control of your locations no matter whatever you do. That is always going to be the case, including your paper rosters. So control of that just as going to be essential no matter what you do, and I agree with Mr. Halperin, updating those things on a routine basis. But I found that there's nothing better than the county structure by which they know every single precinct. They have those election judges. They have that. It's already there in current statute and current process. I think whenever you can kind of tie it in and help hold that together going forward, I think. But as far as whether it's single use or multiple use, that to me, there are issues one way or another. But I think if you wrap it up together, let's make it as easy as we can for implementation.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my only thought, which dealing with single use, I guess I'm also then wondering if there needs to be something in place that requires certain types of security, virus scanning software or any of those types of things that need to be on certain laptops, and do they need to be run prior to any of the downloading of the voters' information onto those files or before any files are uploaded back? I guess I'm my only concern with having things used for multiple uses is that if a virus gets onto one of those laptops, at what point does it start to affect everything else? And, mm-hmm. and so I guess I don't know what those would be, but what type of things would need to be in place to know that we still had virus-free laptops or whatever it was being used out there.
And I just hear the appropriately very high level of concern about not just data security, but in general we have to be that, but also there's many different elements, including Trojans and viruses, and there's other things, but there's also a cost in the beginning and a cost throughout the process, and that has to be understood, and then how that cost, again, the assignment of that cost.
Mr. Chair, just a few other general remarks. If we look at what kinds of things an adversary might try to do with a system like this, we have risk of disclosure of confidential data. We have risk of unauthorized introduction of data into the system, a falsified registration. And we have probably most of all a risk of denial of service attack, someone disrupting proper operation of a polling place. Most polling places are heavily skewed towards one party or another. Somebody could really achieve a lot just by disrupting the operation of a targeted polling place. So our security requirements need to be addressed not only through technical specifications of the sort, some of which have been mentioned, and certainly which the vendors emphasized in their presentations, but through such things as having good auditing mechanisms in place and good contingency plans in place. We have to make sure that if the system is disrupted, whether by a malicious actor or by other events, that the disruption to voting is minimized, that voting can resume quickly and smoothly. And we also need to make sure that there's reasonable means to ascertain the cause of any disruption, at least to the level of whether it's a malicious attack or just something going wrong. Because in a highly charged political environment, if a polling place goes down, somebody's going to fear the worst, for sure, that it's a dirty trick. And we need to have good means in place to be able to rapidly respond with authoritative information on what really happened. And all of those are going to make this whole thing a lot harder. This is not an easy job. And so that helps explain why I'm cautious about full-scale rollouts, why I'm cautious about quick rollouts. And also, I think, why I want to keep it as simple as possible. You know, not the network connectivity, not the photos, not, you know, sort of strip it down to just the basics, because it's going to be a big enough, hard enough thing to get right as it is.
Well, you brought up the next subject.
I had a question to Mr. Halperin. When I look at some of those things and I think of some of the vendors and what they had, which sometimes can make it harder for some of those attempts, intrusion on whatever, but that proprietary specific, in other words, both equipment and software, can make it harder to mess with the system. Would you see that as a security advantage, or does it matter?
Okay, Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I think you're referring to the fact that the deployment vehicle in most of the vendor's case was a commercial off-the-shelf laptop or tablet computer, whereas in one vendor's case they had their own tablet-like end system. I think that's largely a red herring. I think that, you know, if you stripped away the plastic shell on that, you would find it was pretty much a commodity system underneath as far as what was running there, and that in any case, custom versus commodity just sort of changes who knows how much about it. Your adversaries may know less about it. You probably also know less about it. Information on the vulnerabilities of commercial systems are well known. The IT security staff would know. They would have no clue what the vulnerabilities were or how to secure the custom system. So I think it's pretty much a red herring.
Commissioner, and then
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to second what Dr. Halperin said. The more interconnectivity there is in a system like that, the bigger the target it is, and the more security you have to build. And it's just not something that should be underestimated as increasing the scope and the cost of a system. If you want every single polling place connected, you're a huge target, and you have a lot of security complexity.
And I'd echo what Mr. Halperin and Commissioner Parnell just said. To us, auditability is extremely important with data, and this system would be such that would be important. But with security, it's kind of staying ahead of the curve. So it's the flexibility you have to build into the system just to kind of anticipate and be able to react to what can happen, because there's things that you might build into the system, but new things come up that you have to be able to adapt and adjust to. And I think that's the hardest thing in terms of looking at the scope of this type of system throughout the state.
What about the photos and e-poll books? We've touched, Max touched on this, but it's in this general data area and security area.
Well, I would say the big thing there is to that they, you know, you have to ensure that people are allowed for the access that they have that are working in the polls, and that nothing would leave the polling place if you have photos in with that system, and that the security is really tight, and that you can audit it. So, I mean, there's a lot of requirements just with that part of a system that would be complex and would need to be done state-of-the-art, but also flexible, because you have to stay ahead of the curve in terms of people trying to find ways of regarding identity.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was impressed in many ways. This is just dealing with the photo issue in of itself, that the election judges, when they had their tablet or screen in front of them, facing towards them, there was a privacy benefit there, because the voter or anybody else around, that was not visible to them. You do have to be careful, because if an election judge turns it around, okay, then you have that issue. Also, if they verbally would say, so the last four of your social is, okay, no, don't do that. But those are just simply training issues, not equipment issues. That's where you get into the people and the process situation, not the equipment. So the issue wasn't the equipment or the security of the equipment, but this has to do with the people and a process. So I think what I did kind of look for that when they were doing that, and I was had that kind of in mind. As long as they keep it faced towards the election judge, then it wasn't an issue.
General comments?
Chairman, I guess I'll just say I'm curious into really the benefit then of photos. I think I recall Senator Kiffmeyer saying that when you looked at somebody when the judge was looking up and down, and that they would look at the photo after the, you know, the 100th person that came through, are they really looking at the photo? So I guess I'm curious to know what benefits we really think we're gaining by putting photos in.
Well, it makes your system more interesting.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that was a question somewhat directed at me. I would stand by that. I do agree with that. But what I was addressing here was the technical privacy security issue, not the other one, which is looking up and looking down and doing all of that. I think the thing I have said before, though, is that if they have their ID in hand, and they swipe it, and it's a valid ID, and it has a similarity to that, but the possession of the card itself, in concert with that, and the photo match the photo on their card, that was a package together, just like security in general, identity in general here, wasn't just the photo. There are other parameters that go with that that gave you a greater sense of, yes, this is that person, because of the possession of the ID, the other data, and then that it matches what you have in the system with that particular person. I think that gives you an advantage there. But I think there was another piece of it that was demonstrated to me, which was when you have same-day voter registration,
and somebody does not come in with any identity, and you have a voucher. So you have the people come in with their ID, and you have a very high degree of certainty they are who they say they are. And then you have Election Day registration, where you have a fairly low, matter of fact, I would say very low certainty in that regard. And I would say in those cases it was a little different, because the discussion there was that the state has some data that goes with driver's license or state ID that includes a photo, and that would be pertaining to an Election Day registration. But again, they don't have the ID in their hand. They have a voucher. There was a demonstration of a value of, in that situation, of taking the picture of the voter and the voucher, maybe, or like we do it on paper. We document who's the voucher and who's the voter, and those two things are tied together, adding to that a photo, not as a matter of creating an identification, but as a record, a file record, similar to other records we keep on vouching and registering for same-day folks. That's a different kind of discussion, and it had a different kind of value, not so much as, again, creating the identity, but as a documentation and verification, and just like we do with paper. But now we'd have the capacity or the capability of that photo. It'd also be much, many less of them in most cases. That I just thought was important to just make a distinction between those two.
Two, and then I want to focus on timeline.
Okay, just a comment on the photos. I thought that we got the information that the technology is still being developed that would make this accurate and worthy, and so it seems like good discussion for now, but later on our agenda as far as moving forward in the state on this issue. It seems to me that it would have to come down the line.
Matt, and then Central Bank.
Yeah, so we've got several different things under discussion. The one was originally the notion of facial recognition software, and that seemed to be pretty much, you know, not ready for prime time. The other is human recognition of a photo as a means of identification. The third is this capturing of a photo essentially to act as a deterrent for fraud, that, you know, someone would know that there was a record of them. And I think that the third one is interesting, but we have to then rethink fairly substantially the cost question and go back to cost-benefit analysis and the who pays question, that if we're looking at e-poll books as something that saves data entry cost for the county, then it's pretty obvious a county can make their own determination whether it's worthwhile or not, and if it is worthwhile, pay for it. But if we're making a determination as a state that there's some new functionality we want, that we want deterrence of impersonation by Election Day registrants, then that's something that may make sense for the state to pay to get that enhanced functionality. And it's going to be a quite considerable cost, because it's going to be a statewide cost. You can't say we're going to deter fraud in some precincts and not deter it in others. If you decide you want to do that, you're going to have to put that camera and the software and so forth into every precinct, and it's not going to be part of these commercial off-the-shelf e-poll book solutions that vendors are currently offering, and you would have to weigh that against how much reason do we have to believe impersonation is currently happening. So, you know, it would be an interesting question to get into.
Senator Bonham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Originally, I approached this whole discussion from the perspective of a voter verification system, and hearing that there was some desire on behalf of the public to have a broader voter verification system. And so then I learned, like many of us around the table, and so some of my preconceptions fell away, like this idea that you could use a photograph as a means of voter verification, and we're not there technologically, nor putting that aside, using it from the human perspective does not seem like a wise solution. But I do go back to what Senator Kiffmeyer brought up, and that is just an extra piece being with the vouching system, taking a photo on the spot. And so then I hear those reservations with regard to cost, and I'm not sure that I see it that way, because we're talking about the exceptions. Those who need vouching really are the exceptions. And why, you know, is a device like my phone not able to take a picture and put it in a file that every precinct that uses it could then upload, just like they upload their data? I don't know that answer, but that's the question I would ask. Why is it so complicated to think of that when someone's vouching, that we just stand there and take a picture of them? I guess Debbie has a reason why that's more complicated than my simple way of looking at it would suggest.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, it may not be any more complicated than that, but as a election administrator, I don't want election judges using their personal cell phone to take a picture of a voter who's coming in for a vouching purpose. And there would be a cost if we had to supply some kind of camera equipment into that mix in a polling place. There would be cost of equipment, cost of training, cost of maintenance, cost of storage, all those things that go along with that. To me, the bigger picture is that the capture of a photograph for the purpose of documentation, if it doesn't have anything to do with their registration, is outside the scope of what this task force should be looking at. That, to me, is more of a election day registration piece, whatever it might be along those lines, that because that we've determined that it doesn't work in the scope of the poll books that we're talking about. We had that discussion at the last meeting that there were too many other things, that technology wasn't there, as Representative Lane said. So I guess in my thought, there may be more things, as Max noted, that there are security issues or other connectivity issues that go along with the picture piece, but I see that as a completely separate thing from the electronic rosters or e-poll books.
Timeline for implementation of any recommendations and costs, who should pay, put a couple of the bigger topics at the end. Sorry about that.
I know who I think should pay.
Oh. Ms. Erickson, would you like to weigh in on this? Either or both?
Mr. Chair, as far as costs or and timeline of implementation, I think timeliness is always important because it is a very strong effort for counties, cities, townships to prepare for a general election. Even your elections, as we all know, filings start in May, and we are preparing prior to that. So for anything to be recommended, passed, and put in place for 2014 on a full scope could be a significant burden to the local election administration. So I want to make sure, reiterate what has been said here already today, that we provide proper time for things to be researched, vetted, put in place, know how it's going to work, test it out before we say, now you have to use this. As far as the costs, there should be some responsibility from the locals as far as what equipment you want to use. If there's going to be flexibility in working with different vendors and different systems, that is an opportunity for counties and cities to help control their own costs and to generate or determine what their costs will be. With that said, we are all at this point starting to reach life cycles of equipment that we already have in place in our precincts as far as vote tabulation, auto mark machines, and they're starting to reach replacement cycle time. I recently did a just informal survey of counties to see if anybody has HAVA funds left, because most of the equipment that is in the polling places right now was paid for through Help America Vote Act funds. And many counties, most of the counties, in fact, have expended all of their HAVA funds. And most counties do not have any kind of equipment replacement schedule in place other than tax levy dollars in the year that they need to purchase. So additional costs to the county, again, is additional costs to the taxpayers as it goes forward.
Mr. Chairman, I have another meeting, and I apologize. I just want to make some comments, and then I just have to go. In regards to the timeline of recommendations, I think it somewhat depends upon the recommendations. But I think there are some things, such as the upload and the download, that are quite fairly agreed to, that are within the control or technical aspect that can be accomplished, that establish a base and set things up for that. I think the timeline, you know, the counties, the cities, townships, these are the folks that actually have to do it, being respectful of that. Absolutely, without issue, we certainly do understand that. But I think there's also some open issues yet that make a difference on implementation, that it's really hard to lay things out more than that because you just don't, such as the, you know, if we build it in-house versus doing with the vendor, if there is a particular vendor that everybody really likes. As far as the costs, I think it cannot be underestimated what the state pays for in regards to the software. Prior to state having a voter registration system, each county paid for their own software if they had any. And the state has taken up a substantial cost by doing the software on a state level. And it was generally understood, from my background understanding, was that the equipment, other than the Help America Vote Ad equipment, was more for the local units of government to make some of those choices with state standards, but was done on a state level. And again, the Help America Vote Act came in, and we're really very grateful for that, but I don't think we should assume then that either the federal government or the state ever after pays for that equipment. But I appreciate what you're saying here in regards to when you have the e-poll book concept coming in, but there could be the same situation that the software can be a state level and the equipment can be a local level because there are sometimes some values there. That's just one example of how you can have some of those shared costs and shared responsibilities that do happen. But I think it's easy to forget or just assume the value of the state voter registration system and the cost the state pays for every single year in regards to its maintenance and its updating of features and other things like that. And we're very grateful for the federal money, but I think we all pretty much know that thinking the federal government's going to come up with any more, that it's just not going to happen. So it's really going to be on a state level, maybe back to kind of what was more before, software, hardware. And sometimes, though, on the initial, like having something new, there was more help from the state, especially on that initial kind of a situation. And I think that there can be some value there as well, though it shouldn't be presumed upon. And I'd love to hear all the rest of your comments, but I will have to go.
Others? Cost, implementation?
As far as the cost, and I think Ms. Erickson's not going to like this comment, but I've always looked at, you have to also look at what's being saved. And I think by far and away the greatest savings comes to the county at the end of the election, having not to do all the data entry work that is involved. So I think the biggest cost savings is on the county, and so I would argue that the counties consider that.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Maeda, I totally agree with that, and I think that that's where the counties are going to see the benefits. That comes back to the mandatory versus every election versus optional. Allowing the counties the flexibility to determine what's the appropriate level of use and when within their counties, that's where they're going to save the savings. If I have a township election that has five people that turn out to vote, I'm not saving anything by going through the time to program and implement that equipment in those precincts. If I have a state general election where I have thousands of people that come to a precinct with several hundred election day registrations, I'm seeing a huge benefit in that realm. So I completely agree. And counties, don't get me wrong, we definitely recognize and are willing that we are going to absorb some of the cost to do this because there is a benefit for us to do so. But we need to make sure that we're keeping flexibility built into whatever recommendations we come up with instead of saying this is the system that you will use in every election and it's going to cost you this much every time. So by giving that local control so we have that opportunity to control our own costs, that's what I was trying to get at.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll just kind of throughout, I know Secretary Kiffmeyer, Senator Kiffmeyer, who left, was talking about the statewide registration system. So I just want to kind of, I think in my mind, There is still a difference here between statewide registration system that voter registration is required across the state, and everybody across the state is required to use it. And so I think there is a statewide cost there. You know, somebody in the state is going to be paying for it, and everybody in the state is using it. I guess part of that to me comes into for the e-poll books of whether or not they are required to be used statewide or not in statewide elections. If they were required to be used in statewide elections, that to me seems to justify more of a state cost than if they're not required to be used. I guess the other part goes into of just thinking if the state, you know, if we're building the upload and the download for the data, and it doesn't matter if it's a vendor or if a state generated piece we're using that data, you know, you, I guess part of that is, so you know, we're going to build that part regardless. If the state were to build a e-poll book piece, and then one of the counties didn't, so it's not used statewide, and then if some county didn't like the way the state one worked and wanted to use their own vendor type of a program, I guess I'm wondering if there wouldn't be a requirement that they couldn't use a vendor and that they were having to use you know, the statewide system, even though they might not like all of the features of it. So those are part of the plays, I think, in here that we need to decide if we're spending state money. Is it required statewide? Is it required to be used to the exclusion of anybody else? What justifies when the state were to pay for something like that?
Other comments? Cost, implementation? We've covered a lot of ground today. A lot of big pictures. I think we'll be able to put together a draft to get out that incorporates these comments, our conversations, that kind of thing, before our next meeting, the 9th. And we really will try to hammer it through at that meeting, knowing we have another meeting on the 30th. And, you know, if something special comes up, there's opportunities to fill in that. But thank you to everybody. And Ms. Johnson, we're going to hang up on you now. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Please leave your materials.